Good afternoon, my fellow human beings on this planetary orbis that is floating through space and time. I hope you're having a good afternoon on this Wednesday. It's hump day according to current worker-slave theories. Some of you are going to get the fantastic happy hour deal at Schlimpy's down the street. You'll buy a barbecue Sammy and get a pint of beer. You don't care that it's rotting the insides out of you. It's still September the 25th, 2019, I believe it is. I believe it is September the 25th. That is 2/5/2019. You're still alive. You're still here. And this is the Little Saigon Report, and I got a cup of coffee. And I'm hoping that I'll get another podcast out of these batteries. I still need to get a power supply for my fucking Zoom H4N Pro. I really love it. I really love my Zoom H4N Pro. It does a good job recording. But there's one little problem. It uses a lot of fucking energy. And this is... well, I need to get a power supply. I need to save the batteries for day zero. Though you might be asking logically, Dan, why would you need podcast batteries for day zero? And I would have to ask you to not ask uncomfortable fucking questions. It's not right to ask those sorts of questions. It is true, it is true. It is unlikely that podcasting will be my principal concern after day zero. One of my principal concerns will be, how do I get food, water, and shelter? And I don't want to go to the FEMA camp. No. I won't be showing up for the buses on that day. I will not be showing up for the buses on that day. It is a wonderful day. And if you're a mega head, if you're a Trumpster, if you support Trump, this is a great day because he seems to have outwitted the coyote once again. It's quite amazing. I personally don't give a shit either way. I did not vote for him. I did not vote for Hillary. I didn't even vote for Gary Johnson. It took one particular thing for Gary Johnson to do. It was the whole, why don't you bake the cake? And believe me, that baked the cake, as they used to say. So I am no longer a voter. I don't participate in your ritual. I know you believe that by voting a couple times, you know, by voting every other year or every 2 years, that you somehow have control of the crocodile. And for those of you who are new listeners, when I say crocodile, you can substitute government. But I like the word better because as metaphor, it's fucking perfect. Yeah, the voting, all the voting does is tell the crocodile that you still love it. It has nothing to do with policy. It doesn't really change anything. The crocodile is going to eat babies no matter what you do. And I know you want to believe, well, maybe if we voted hard enough, we could get our freedom back. If we just vote harder. Yeah, just keep on voting. Just keep being like that fucking monkey with the fucking banana in the jar. Okay, at some point you need to let go of voting, just like the fucking monkey needs to let go of the fucking banana, because otherwise you're going to get trapped. Anyways, I thought I would cover one topic that's in the headline. That's the whole Trump thing. The Trump thing where the Democrats wanted to impeach him again because he supposedly had a call with this Zelensky guy in the Ukraine, yada, yada, yada. I so don't give a shit about this political soap opera bullshit. It is about as interesting to me at this point in my life as an anarchist as the intrigues of the upper class of Rome in the first century AD. Yes, I know people were poisoned. I know that people were tortured. I know Caligula was an asshole, and Claudius might not have been so bad. But the fact is, I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck about the intrigues of the elite of the patrician class of the first century AD of Rome, just like I don't give a fuck about the intrigues of the elite in 2019. Does it impact me? Maybe. But the fact is, I don't know what the real story is. Okay? A lot of this looks like smoke and mirrors bullshit to me. A lot of this looks like a kind of deeper deception. A deeper kind of psyop. I don't really know if it's real. If you're going to tell me, well, Dan, don't you know that Democrats hate Trump? Well, maybe that's true. But then I keep seeing these pictures of Hillary and Trump hugging and kissing way back when. So I really don't know if it is true. And here's the other thing too, folks. A lot of fucking Republicans said this shit when Obama was president. Like, oh, Obama's terrible and blah, blah, blah. And this includes a lot of elites who now hang out with him at golf courses and shit. You know, and participate with him in special charities and fucking bullshit. So I just don't buy it. It's a load of crap, folks. Okay? Now, is it possible that there is a legitimate attempt to impeach Trump? Sure there is. And that just makes the crocodile happier because it'll do nothing for your dignity or your freedom. And frankly, it'll lead you to believe you have power. That's why stuff like this is interesting, because it's basically reinforcement learning. You're essentially being exposed to a situation and you're being told you have a way out, you know, and here's your way out. And look at it, Trump won and you got out, but you didn't get out. You escaped nothing. You're still in the same fucking prison, dude. So am I. But it does look like Trump escaped once again, and it does look like the Democrats want to impeach him no matter what. So it's interesting. Strange days indeed. I'm not really sure what happens next. I do expect at some point the ground to start slipping underneath us, but I really don't know when that happens. Next topic. I was out at the bar last night. Now, as a aforementioned, as boilerplate, what you're about to hear could be technically called apocryphal. You know, like those books of the Bible that the elders of the Council of Nicaea excluded from the Bible. Like the Book of Enoch. So yeah, I went out last night and I was really lonely, so I hit Broadway. I went to Schlichty's. I went to Schlichty's not far from Union Avenue. I went out last night, I was really, really lonely. I got drunk at Schlichty's, and then I wandered on down to Gumpel's. And there I had some whiskey and a martini and two or three apple teenies and maybe a beer, I don't know. I love that place. Sure, it's a gay bar, but I'm not a homophobe. After I was there for a while, I drank myself to a stupor. The bartender told me to leave. I told him to fuck off. And then he called for Grumpus. And a strange-looking man in a tiny skirt came from the corner and he said, "You get out, or I'm gonna hug you." And this man was covered in hair and sweat, wearing a skirt. So I made my way to the street. And then I went down to Sister Mary's Whiskey and Burgers, a known hangout for the few straight women left on Broadway. Of course, they're all hardcore feminists. So I pretend that I give a shit. I listen to their political rantings against Trump. I say, "Hey, isn't that Trump guy a total scumbag?" And then they chime in. "Oh yeah, that Trump guy." That Trump guy, he's such a jerk. I wish somebody would do something about him. I can't wait to vote for Warren, Elizabeth Warren. You know she's Cherokee. And so I'm talking to these left-wing women, and it's getting late, getting near closing time. And one of these beauties, a blonde-haired beauty, maybe she was 30 years old, maybe she was 35, I really didn't know, I was hoping she was a woman. One of these blonde-haired beauties looked at me and said, "So what's your deal?" And I said, "I don't have a deal." And she said, "What do you do for a living?" And I said, "Well, I monitor the state of the sea." And she said, "Oh, you work for NOAA." And I said, "No, no, no, no. I monitor the state of the sea. I monitor the state of the ocean. I monitor the fish. I commune with them through a mental vibe. It requires waking up early in the morning around 6 a.m. because that's when you're able to buy beer. I go down to the Chevron and I get my meal for the day, a can of Nally's Tamales and a six-pack of Rainier. And then I begin to communicate with those creatures that live deep within the sea, the octopi, the squid, the sperm whale, and the orca, the dolphin, and, yeah, those little cute things, the fucking otters. And that's what I do. I commune with the sea. I monitor the state of the sea. She was very confused, very drunk, and she said, "You know, I don't understand, but would you like to come back and hang out for a bit?" And I was caught off guard because I'm a 50-year-old man. I'm not attractive. So my first thought was that Lola song, you know, Lola, L-O-L-A, Lola. Yeah, check for the Adam's apple, buddy. Check for the Adam's apple. But sometimes they wear scarves, and that's something you gotta be on the watch for too, buddy. But I was convinced she was a real woman. She looked like a real woman. So I said to myself, "Dan, you're never going to have sex again unless you have sex right now." So I conjured up the best fucking line I could, the best way I could talk to her, the best dating line I could come up with. And I said, "Baby, baby." I said, "Baby, would you like to have some of my protein?" I said, "Honey bunch, would you like to sample my protein?" I said, "If we go back to your place, I'll spungus into a glass and you can try my protein." And as you can imagine, that line did not work. But I will tell you, after she and her friends got done kicking me and kicking me in the nuts and hitting me over the head with various glasses and plates, and as I came to from my concussed state in the alleyway with old Phil from Boston, we talked about women. We talked about the ways of relationships and dating. We shared a little Morgan Davis 2020. The finest of all fortified wines, fortified with love and a little bit of, I don't know, antifreeze. So yeah, that was my dating last night. That's my dating story. Fuck you. Next topic is really not much of a topic. I came to the realization that Pabst Blue Ribbon, PBR, is really just fluoridated sparkling water with a hint of beer. And I'm thinking to myself, that's the new marketing campaign for PBR. Now you could say, "Dan, isn't that true of Oli, Olympia, and Schmitty's, and that other fucking Rainier shit they call Rainier?" isn't it true that those other things are kind of crappy and just shitty like PBR? It is true, folks, that there are many shitty beers. There are many beers that are available at Chevron or AMPM or 7-Eleven. Those are the finest of places to go to buy groceries, if you want to know. I get all my groceries at Chevron, all my daily vitamins, all of the minerals I am required as some kind of freak that lives in this fucking town. I go there and I get it. I get my PBR, which now is to be remembered as fluoridated sparkling water with a hint of beer. And I do think that would be a great marketing campaign, because the thing is, there's all these fucking, I don't know, rebranded Zimas out there now. These fucking sparkling fucking alcoholic drinks. And I'll admit it, I've had them, and they're not so bad. Kind of like White Claw. It's fucking messed up because it's hard to think you're a man when you're getting drunk off of White Claw. It's like you say to yourself, are my testicles shrinking? I should be buying the Elysian space dust if I were a real man. Is my dick getting smaller? I should be buying Elysian Stardust like a dude who still has testosterone. Am I still a guy who's gonna get laid? Yeah, so anywho. Next topic. Do animals have souls? Now, this is a tough one, and this is a bit religious. And since I'm a Christian, sometimes I go to that realm. And if you're an anarchist, and you're saying, Dan, how can you be an anarchist and be a Christian? I suggest you go to 1 Samuel chapter 8 and read it about 50 fucking times. And then read the book of Judges and ask yourself, wouldn't that have been a cool time to be alive? If I could live in any time in the Bible, I think the book of Judges is my favorite. It was kind of like the Wild West of the Old Testament. It was the Somalia, like when people say, oh, go to Somalia. Go to the book of Judges. Anywho, the question before us is, do animals have souls? And I know some of you have pets. You have cats, you have dogs. Some of you even have lizards. I'm not really sure. I mean, I'm personally no expert on the cognitive, emotional capacity of most reptiles. But fine, if you want to keep an iguana as a pet, that's your business. If you want to keep a snake as a pet, that's your business. I'm not really sure if there are stakeholders in it. I kind of think dogs are stakeholders. When I say dogs, I don't mean French bulldogs, just so we can get that out of the way. I mean actual dogs. But actual dogs are kind of stakeholders. Like, actual dogs are useful. Actual dogs perform useful things. Like, they can actually help you hunt for food, for example. They can help protect you. They will care for you. They will defend you. Bottom line, actual dogs are very useful. Cats are also technically useful. I'm not, as far as love goes, that's a separate topic, but cats are useful in terms of the fact they keep away rats and other small vermin. So I love cats that way. And let me add to the list the parrot, because I didn't quite understand. Like, you know in those old-timey fucking movies where some fucking pirate has a parrot? And actually, parrots make a lot of sense. I actually stayed at a bed and breakfast in 2016. It's in Western Washington. I think it's off of Highway 2, past Monroe. But basically, there was a parrot there called Mr. Juma. And I swear to God, Mr. Juma knew when to call the dogs in. Mr. Juma knew, he literally, like fucking Flavor Flav, he literally knew what time it was. Mr. Juma was awesome. Mr. Juma was able to kind of manage the house even when Mr. Juma's owner wasn't there. And not even being asked to do it, he just enjoyed keeping things organized. Mr. Juma enjoyed stuff making sense. And so it kind of makes sense. When you think about it, the parrot might have been the very first personal organizer. Like, the African gray parrot might have been the very first, you know, fucking iPad or smart device. And if I had a choice between an Android or an iPhone or any fucking tablet or an African gray parrot on my shoulder, I'll take the fucking parrot. But here's the thing, folks. Even if animals are useful as pets, and some of them are, and again, I don't include French bulldogs. The only thing useful in a French bulldog is for conjuring things. Like, if you want to thin the veil between this reality and the next, between the earthly realm and the heavenly realm, but not really heavenly. Really, if you want to pierce the veil to hell, you have to have a French bulldog. Now, me as a Christian, I'm not a big fan of that, but the French bulldog is a conduit at around 7 p.m. Yeah. Also, maybe Beans needs obedience training. This is a conversation I've had recently with experts on the topic. And if you don't know who Beans is a French bulldog owned by my sister. But does anybody really own an animal? Or does the animal kind of own you? Are you owned by your creature? Back to topic. Do they have souls? Here's the deal, folks. I do not know for certain. One of my crucial learning steps along the road of being a Christian, of trying to follow Jesus in his path, is figuring out how to let God judge. Because in some ways, this fits into that God judging category. I don't really know if animals have souls. Based upon my reading of the Bible, my initial answer would be no. It's not that I don't think they deserve it. It's like if you say to some kid, you know, little Fluffy died, and the kid says, where did Fluffy go? And you say, well, Fluffy went to rabbit heaven. But there is no heaven for rabbits, okay? There really isn't. There's no heaven for dogs. There's definitely no heaven for cats. I'm not saying cats go to hell, but if there was like an intermediate realm, that's where they should get shoved. Okay. And frankly, that's the best place for cats because they can keep out the riffraff from hell. So yeah, I'd like to put the cats in an intermediate zone just above Sheol. And they can wander about making sure the French bulldogs don't try to get in to heaven. Anyways, I think God is kind. I think God loves his creation. I think God loves us, but I also think that there's a purpose to all of God's decisions. And this is something you have to think about. It's kind of like saying, does God care? Does God care at all, one way or the other, if, you know, I want to think of a good example. Does God care one way or the other if, for example, you went to a party at somebody's house, you were really worried, and you had a good time? Like, does God care that you have a good time at a party? Does God care about shit like that? I don't really know. If you prayed to God saying, I'm going to this party, and I'm really stressed out, and I'm going to be nervous, help me out. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think to myself, maybe that's not something God really does anything about. But on the other hand, maybe. You don't know if you don't ask. That's the thing. And if you did have a good time at the party, how would you know it was God? I mean, I'm not saying it's not God. The answer for a Christian, arguably, is always God. But I'm talking about the earthly realm right now, where we've been given free will. And even though, yes, God owns this world, he also gave us free will. If you want to know, and I keep saying this sometimes about the riddles of the scholastics, can God create a stone so heavy that God cannot move it? That's what free will is, buddy. That literally is free will. It is literally the stone so heavy that God cannot move it. So yeah, and God created the stone, is my point. God literally created a stone so heavy he could not move it. That is free will. And yes, God could take it away, just like God could remove the stone from existence, and yet God chooses not to. So when I think about animals having souls, I have to ask myself, what would be the purpose? What would be the reason? Why would heaven be filled with lots of animals? I really don't know. You know, I don't think there is a moral import or a moral aspect to the behavior of animals. It's not to say they're evil. They're not. Actually, in a weird way, they're the creatures that are beyond good and evil. It's kind of like if you were to ask yourself, what does Nietzsche mean when he talks about reaching a point where you transcend the ethics and you simply act? Well, look at an animal. An animal doesn't ask a lot of questions about the bullshit we do. And why would it? Why would an animal do that? If you're getting sick, let's say you've been infected with, I don't know, the plague. Do you think the plague gives a shit about you? I mean, do you think these tiny little cells that are slowly killing you, these little bacteria that are destroying your lungs, that are giving you all kinds of sores on your body, do you think the plague cares one way or the other? It is simply the plague. If you're walking, you know, in Africa, in the savannah, and some lion jumps out and eats you, do you think that it was fucking, it had a vendetta? Do you think it was seeking revenge for something? No. And if, let's say for example, a dolphin saves you at sea, like let's say you're a drowning sailor and some dolphin comes along and saves you, does that really imply that the dolphin is actually making the same decision that some human would be making? Because keep in mind, the dolphin is designed to be in the water, so it's not exactly the same risk that a human would be taking. On the other hand, humans kill dolphins, so there's that. And I really do want to move to the next topic, because in a lot of ways this is a ridiculous topic, but I thought I would get out of the way because, and I'm going to admit something, I don't want to admit this, but I'm going to admit it. So my sister's had this dog for about a year named Beans. And he's a French bulldog. And this last December of last year, when they were in Hawaii, when they were in Hawaii last year, enjoying Maui, enjoying the sun, enjoying a tropical paradise, which of course they paid for with their hard work, so why am I acting like a jerk? Anyways, while they were there, I got paid to watch Beans. Beans, the French bulldog. And I'm going to admit something before I go to the next topic. I like Beans. Beans has got issues. Beans has got behavioral issues. It's entirely plausible that Beans' behavioral issues are due to the fact that Beans needs some training, some obedience training. We don't really know. And that may be the case. But think about this. Before we go to the next topic, focus on this. And what I'm admitting to here is I like Beans, okay? I know I make fun of Beans. I know I mock Beans. I know I say he's a conduit to evil. It's just because the French bulldog looks like an aborted dog. Like, if a dog had an abortion, if a dog had a miscarriage at some lower state of development before the dog was ready to become a puppy, I think it would look like a fucking French bulldog. Any dog after a few weeks after the egg has been fertilized, after hours or days, the first stage is the French bulldog stage. And if you perform the ancient rites of Kabulek, rites that are etched in, you know, cuneiform and Sanskrit on the walls of the Kasbah, you can actually transform an aborted dog into a French bulldog, but it takes magic skills that I do not have. I don't have those magical skills. I don't. But I care about Beans, and I don't want him to go away. If he ends up going away, I think he'll end up being a two-time loser, and eventually he'll end up on doggy death row. And I do not want to see Beans on doggy death row. So I'm hoping he learns. I'm hoping that we can teach him. But remember, folks, if we were talking about a human being right now, like an actual person, wouldn't you be fucking horrified? If we were talking about a person right now, oh, Beans is a person that needs obedience training, Beans is acting up, wouldn't that seem like some kind of fucking dystopia? So if you want to ask yourself, do animals have souls? My question is this. Would you treat anything that has a soul the way you treat animals? And that includes the condescending bullshit, too. I'm not just talking about, I'm a vegan, I don't eat meat. Listen, honey, then you haven't been listening to what I'm saying here. This isn't about eating meat, okay? I'm an apex predator. I eat everything. I am the apex predator. As a human being, I am the worldwide power champion. As a human being, we are such an apex predator. We eat everything. We almost eat everything to death. So don't tell me about what I know what I am. I also have a soul. But yes, in biological terms, I know what I am. I'm a predator. Humans are predators. If you haven't figured that out yet, you need to wake the fuck up. And we need to wise up as predators and behave with a better understanding of our role. But like I said, even when you're doing the cutesy shit, even when you can say you're a vegan, I don't give a fuck. Even when you're doing the cutesy shit, the condescending, putting a sweater on your dog, having little doggy parties, even when you're doing that, if you did that to a person, what do you think that life would be like for them? So this is my point, folks. If animals had souls, they would be really pissed off at the way we treat them. But they don't seem to kill us. It's like the orca whale. To me, the most elegant proof that animals don't have souls is orcas haven't started killing kayakers. If you consider how much we have fucked up the Puget Sound, and I don't give a fuck about having a conversation about why the oceans are acidifying or why the amount of radiation hitting the earth is increasing. I don't want to have a conversation about why all the salmon are dying, but can we at least admit that there are some weird and funky and bad shit happening with the ecosystem in the Puget Sound? Can we at least admit that? That's all I want us to admit, because I know this for a fact. I know for a fact because I grew up here. And it's gross. It is not in good shape, okay? So these orca whales are dying, or they're going away, or both. And they're not able to have kids. And my question is, why don't they start killing people? They could eat us. That we certainly have nutritional value, probably about as much as the crap they're pulling out of the ocean at this point. And I ponder this because they have these huge emotional brains. So why don't they start killing people? And this is the answer. And some of you aren't going to like it. But if a creature has a soul, if a creature has a soul, that means they have a conscience. That also means not only does the conscience regulate what they do, but the conscience also acts as a kind of prompter for what is okay to have done to you. Do you understand what I'm saying? The conscience isn't just about doing the right thing. The conscience, that sense of morality, that moral compass, also tells you when you're being fucked. And that conscience also tells you if you're being fucked and you have no choice, then maybe the best thing to do is to basically take some kind of revenge. Now, of course, that is the wrong answer. Jesus Christ would tell us that's the wrong answer. You know, Jesus would say, I know your pain, but give up your pain. Give your pain to me. But orca whales haven't been killing kayakers. That means that they have no real moral dilemma over what's happening to them. They have no understanding of it. Okay? They are totally being murdered by us. And yet they don't calculate that, even though they have these brilliant brains, even though they're as smart as they are. They haven't quite figured out yet that they should just fucking start killing us, because what else are they going to do? So yeah, I don't know if animals have souls. I kind of think if you have a soul, souls are very tricky things, right? Because if you have a soul, then all of a sudden you do start making decisions about right and wrong. And that gets tricky. Anywho, next topic. And we're doing okay. I have to tell you that, you know, this fucking H4N Pro Zoom, it uses batteries. I need to get a power supply for it. I know I opened up with that, but I really do need to get a fucking power supply for this thing. I don't know. Out of coffee. Fuck. Next topic. Why do lies work? Now, we've talked about lies in the past, and and that one of the ways in which a lie works, and when I say lie, I mean Lima, India, Echo, Sierra. Excuse me, that's lies. I mean Lima, India, Echo. I mean lie, as in deception, as someone is telling you a falsehood, quote unquote. Why do lies work? Well, one way in which lies work, as we've discussed in the past, is all good lies contain some amount of truth. They do. So, and that's also good news, because knowing that any good lie contains a little truth means you have a way to figure out not just that you're being lied to, but you might even have a way to figure out a little bit of the truth. It's hard. It is very hard. It is, like I've said, being a Sovietologist at Langley back in the 70s, reading Pravda and Izvestia and trying to read between the lines. It's not easy, okay? It is a kind of skill. It is an art form, not a science, to be a Sovietologist. And in a lot of ways, you got to kind of be one this way. You kind of got to be one these days if you want to read the news and know what's going on. So lies work in part because they contain some truth. But lies also work sometimes. And this is really important, folks. You got to listen to this. Sometimes a lie is successful because the truth is too hard to accept. Now, I need you to think about that for a second. Remember 9/11. I remember where I was. I was working in supply chain management at Rolls-Royce North America in Indianapolis, and I remember that my ex-girlfriend, ex-wife called me on the phone, and she said, "Do you see what's going on? Do you see what's happening?" She called me on my phone. I think I'd just gotten a mobile phone recently at that time, and I think she either called me on that or she called me on my phone at work. And she might even have emailed me. The point is, she said, go check the news. And so I checked the news, and it's about the first building being hit. And then I make my way to the cafeteria. And so you guys know, Rolls-Royce North America, they don't make cars. They make jet engines, turbines, power solutions. And the factory I worked at in supply chain in Indianapolis was basically an old Allison plant. And if you know anything about World War II, Allison, which is also General Motors, they made a lot of the engines that went into a lot of aircraft. So anyways, Rolls-Royce bought this Allison plant back in the 90s, I think. And then when I got there in the year 2000, and I gotta tell you, I love this job. Like, I have to say that if 9/11 had not happened, there's a very good chance I would still be working there today. Is it possible I'd be doing something different? Well, I mean, I kind of got into computer programming while I was there, working in supply chain, doing logistic analysis and stuff like that. So anyways, I go to the cafeteria. This is 9/11/2001. I go to the cafeteria, and it's around 9 a.m. I think it's around 9, it could be around 10, but it was basically the morning, 9/11, but I'm basically on East Coast time, because I'm in Indianapolis, so it's around about the time it's happening, right? You know, the time syncs up, so to speak. And so I'm in the cafeteria looking at the little color TV sets that are hanging from the ceiling, and I see the second plane hit the building, and there's the hush in the room, and people are nervous and saying, what the hell is going on? And it was fucking horrible. And then a few minutes later, we see the first building pancake, and then the second building. And then sometime around 5 p.m., World Trade Center 7, 47 stories tall, also collapsed. According to the official report, a series of fires that led to the building becoming unstable. Folks, one of the ways in which a lie works, and the problem is we're talking about really bad lies. These are like the lies that are related to things that are sometimes called false flags. And if you don't know what a false flag is a military operation whereby you can set up blame for some event and pinpoint it on someone else. You basically create an event and then you place blame on someone else. Like, for example, the Gulf of Tonkin. You know, that more or less led to the U.S. ratcheting up in Vietnam. we claim the North Koreans launched a torpedo attack, and we place blame on them, and therefore we need to ratchet up forces. That is a false flag. When the Germans dressed up soldiers to cross the border, right before they invaded Poland, they dressed up soldiers like they were Polish soldiers, and they attacked a German outpost. That would have been a false flag. Operation Northwoods, which thankfully never happened, where the U.S. government planned to use chemical weapons on the American people and blame it on the Cubans. That is also, thank God it never happened, would have been a false flag. And when the famous neocon document, Project for a New American Century, and you should look it up and read it sometimes if you're one of these folks that says, I don't believe in conspiracy theory. Yeah, tell that to the lawyers who work with RICO. Anyways, if you've never read it, when it talks about the need for a new Pearl Harbor, yeah, folks, they were talking about the need for a false flag. Sometimes truths, you see, this is how hard it is. It's hard to even think this way. Sometimes truths, a truth, is so terrible, so horrible, that almost any lie will be believed. So as long as the lie is even remotely plausible, as long as the lie is even close to sounding like it could be true, people will believe it because the truth is terrible. So whether it's the JFK assassination, whether it's landing people on the moon and forgetting how we did it, or 9/11, and there are other examples, people do not want to admit the possibility, not just that the government would lie to them, but this is much worse, folks. Nobody wants to admit that the government would do something so terrible, because people would say, well, wait a minute, Dan, don't people like you and I work for the government? Dan, I have a friend who works for the DOD. We play golf together. I have this friend, he works for the DOD. And we get drinks after work. I know you have a friend. Everybody has a friend. What I'm going to tell you is that the nature of these operations is that they're compartmentalized. So it's really fucking irrelevant if you have a friend. It doesn't fucking matter about your friend. Let's say your friend had top secret clearance. No, better yet, had Q clearance, which is the highest level. Guess what? Even with Q clearance, that doesn't mean you get to read every fucking secret thing that the government has. Clearance means you have the right to access something. It doesn't mean you have a need to know. So if you're not given rights or privileges to read something, guess what? You don't read it. Clearance is fucking irrelevant. We all have friends. We all say to ourselves, I have a friend at NASA. I have a friend in the Army. I have a friend who, you know, flies airplanes for United. Ergo, if my friend tells me they're not putting shit into the sky, it must be true. It, folks, whatever the truth is, that's not a good argument. Okay? If I claim the government's all bullshit because of one event in my life, that would also not be a good argument, okay? Just because you know one person that doesn't suck does not imply that Lee Harvey Oswald killed JFK. I promise you, the government has wheels inside of wheels. It has for a very long time. And the bigger it gets, the more obscure things become. You know, remember, like a day before 9/11, what was Rumsfeld telling people? We've lost $2 trillion. We've lost $2 trillion. Now, folks, I've lost things. I've lost my heart. It was broken and cast away into the sea of despair. I lost my car when it was repoed in January of 2018. I've lost my keys to my house. I've lost my mind. But if I had $2 trillion, I don't see how I could fucking lose it. It does fit into the category of, well, Dan, we went to the moon. It's like that Don Pettit guy at NASA who says, we went to the moon and we would really like to go back, but we destroyed the technology to go there. How does anybody believe something like that? You know how they do? Because the truth is too fucking terrible. Great lies the greatest lies in history, the greatest lies you'll ever be exposed to. And this is why it's so hard to be a man or woman of faith in this world. Because you have to, in the darkness of night, admit to yourself that you could be being deceived. Just like Descartes, you have to stare into the darkness and say, there could be some deceiver. And I don't care if you want to come at this from the angle of simulation theory or theology. The fact is, whether reality is a massive algorithmic construct or whether reality is a thing is a completely irrelevant fucking issue. In the darkness of night, you have to ask yourself, is there some dark spirit out there deceiving me? If you admit to yourself that the greatest lies in history are only believed because the truth is too difficult, then you have to cast that gaze upon your own life. You have to practice the art of introspection. You have to ask yourself, which illusions do you believe? Which illusions have you committed yourself to that if they turned out to be false, you would be in great pain? In fact, that might be a good way to deal with a lot of these questions. Ask yourself how you would feel if something you believed to be true was false. A lot of people believe America is a free country. I know. Remember what, you know, Barbara Bush said, or George Bush, or one of the Bushes said? You remember what the Bushes said after 9/11? Go out and shop. Prove you're free. Prove you're free. Go to Walmart. Prove you're free. Go to Best Buy. Prove you're free. Buy that new Dell laptop. And we all did that. On 9/11, I bought the lie. And I am ashamed of that. I should have been smarter. I should have been further down the road. On 9/11, because for lots of reasons, not the least of which is I was in love with a woman who believed in the system, and I loved her. And the thing about love is that it'll pull you certain directions. When I left the Army in 1999, I was pretty close to being where I ended up in 2016, and that is as an anarchist. I was reading a lot of Noam Chomsky. I was reading a lot of anarchist thought. Yeah, I was more on the syndicalist side of things, which I've now come to realize is sort of an ideological issue. But the bottom line is this. If I'd never met my ex, there's a very good chance I would have ended up anarchist sooner. And I've talked about this in podcasts. You know, when I was a kid, you could have seen it in my eyes. As a kid in kindergarten. Believe me, Sister Margarine, I mean Marjorie, but I called her Margarine. Sister Margarine knew. I'm ashamed of myself that I did not recognize on 9/11 that these buildings symmetrically imploded. But then again, even though I had a background in systems theory, even though I had a background in history, I still hadn't gone far enough down the world of technology and engineering to fully grasp what I did and didn't understand, what I could see with my own eyes. The fact is this, and actually there's a brilliant guy who's part of the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. His last name is Gage. If you search YouTube, you'll find videos. And I recommend, you guys need to check out Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. This isn't a bunch of fucking crackpots. These are people that are looking at World Trade Center 7. Okay, that's the building that collapsed at basically 5 p.m. or whatever on 9/11, many hours after the attacks began and ended. Check these guys out because they're trying to get to the truth. The fact is, I'm ashamed of myself. I saw these buildings symmetrically implode. I saw these buildings collapse at free fall speed. I recall reading that these buildings were designed to survive massive shocks. And again, when I say massive shocks, this includes impacts by airplanes like the Boeing 707. I'm pretty certain they were designed to take a hit from a Boeing 707. The fact is, they were designed to take the hits. No steel frame building in the history of steel frame buildings ever did what these three buildings did on 9/11. Ever. Not before, not after. Ever. But the problem is, folks, and this is what hit us on 9/11, and this is what we have to admit to ourselves, and maybe this is where I need to end this podcast and move on to the next one. The problem is that the truth is too fucking hard. The truth is too difficult. The truth is our government murdered thousands of Americans so that it could get the right to go around the world and steal people's shit and murder more. Our government murdered thousands of Americans so that it could guarantee the production of heroin in Afghanistan and pretty much up the production level so that our troops could guard the fields of opium in Afghanistan and so that it could end up in the streets. Our government murdered thousands of Americans so that they could kill millions of men, women, and children over the last almost 20 years. If you admit to yourself, even for a second, that 9/11 is bullshit, and folks, the story we've been told is total bullshit, then you have to admit that your government is crooked as fuck. Have a great Wednesday.